What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Dr. Ismael Gallo, better known as Closed Doc. Dr. Gallo is a former professional baseball player and current doctor of physical therapy. He is a renowned expert in the field of baseball and softball training, dedicated to empowering players, coaches, and parents to take charge of their training. With a strong mission in mind, he seeks to revolutionize the training industry by challenging the status quo and offering innovative solutions for on-field performance and overall well-being. With a strong emphasis on evidence-based practices, improving on-field performance, and commitment to simplicity, Dr. Gallo's mission is to empower individuals to take control of their training and fully embrace the joy of every moment spent in training and on the field. So on today's show, we talk about several different things. We get into Dr. Gallo's background, which included dropping out of high school and then eventually getting drafted by the LA Dodgers. We talk about what Flows training is, and we talk about how to implement it in your team today. You're going to love this episode with Dr. Ismael Gallo. Ismael, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, Coach Gellner?
Oh, you know, just living the dream up at the old Zebra Baseball Complex, looking at our field, which is really green this time of year. We got a ton of rain last week, so that's really nice. But looking forward to, just cutting it up with you a little bit today. And I wanted to start because I think your background is really interesting. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your background, how you got back into baseball, I guess we could say, and just kind of, you know, walk us through that process and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I think starting in high school is probably a good starting point. You know, it's one of those where in high school I actually came into, because I was never that great, like in the school setting, like as far as my grades. But even in Little League, I was always the best player. So coming into high school, there was some expectations because my brother was already playing there. So there were some expectations, like his little brother's good, he's coming into it. So my freshman year, I was actually able to play baseball and I had a pretty good year. All right, now I'm playing with the best kids in the city. I'm playing with seniors, and I was a freshman, and I ended up hitting like 400 that summer. And then I was like, all right, sophomore year, I'm coming in. I'm probably going to be the starting shortstop in varsity. All these great things are happening for me, but at the same time, I was not showing up for class. So I think I was that just for some reason. I mean, obviously, I kind of know the reason, but it was one of those where it wasn't in me to show up to the courses to be able to get that 2.0, which is super low, but at the same time, at that point for me, it was challenging because I didn't have the discipline to just show up and do my classwork. So what ended up happening my sophomore year was I just didn't make grades. So then you go, now I'm going to miss this entire year just to academics. And then fast forward to the next year, it was basically the same story. I went and played Legion ball, did really well. And then after that, junior year, didn't make years, the academic again, right? It came back and bit me in the butt. And then what ended up happening was halfway through my junior year, they came up to me and they're like, you know what? You just don't have enough credits. You're basically going to go to continuation school. And then that was my end of my baseball career as far as on that point when I was 17, that was the end where it was like, all right, now where do I go play? There's nowhere to play. If you're not in school, there's really not many options at that point. So I ended up dropping out of school at that point at 17. And I found myself at 17 with zero options. There was no more organized baseball. So what I ended up doing was I just kept playing Sunday league baseball with my pops for like the next year and a half.
So how did you end up in junior college baseball then?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting story because I mean, and when they told me to go to continuation school, I literally didn't even show up. I showed up one day and I was like, this is not for me. I think I'm just done. So for like a year and a half, I didn't do anything. And then they called me and said, do you want to get your GED? And I said, I don't know what that's going to do for me, but if it's something I guess I can use other than a high school diploma, I'll do it. So I went, got passed the GED. So I got my GED. And then after that, one of my buddies came over and said, hey, I'm trying out for Mount Sac. He's like, I think you could play there. Like just like as a player. Right. He's like, I think you're good enough to be the shortstop. And I'm thinking to myself like, oh yeah, what's this guy talking about, man? Like,
sure.
I haven't played organized baseball in so many years. And even the academic part, right. I was like, I don't even know if I can go there. So then he ends up taking me and I end up meeting Coach Maz, and Coach Maz is like, if you have your GED, you can enroll. He's like, and you could try out for the team. And then at that point I was like, well, yeah, I guess I'll give it a shot, but it wasn't easy. I mean, I think it's one of those where when you show up to a new environment, everything just looks so much bigger. Like, the players look so big. Everybody looks like those guys that in high school hit 500, they were all city, all everything, you know? And you're thinking,
sure.
Yeah, man, like, I'm coming out of nowhere. Like, I got no name. But then also I felt like I did have skills at that point. You know, I think that's one thing I always loved about baseball, man. It's that it's the ultimate equalizer, right? Doesn't matter if you got $1 million in the bank or you got zero. At the end of the day, everybody's got the equal chance of like, hey, guess what? You're going to throw the ball over the plate and we're going to try to figure this out man to man. And there is no background. There is no like what you did in high school, right? Literally going like, mm-hmm. Right, who's going to make the plays? Who's going to hit? Who's going to do this the most consistently? And at that point, that's kind of where I stood out. It was, yeah, I was making plays. I was doing my thing. And then the coach eventually said, you're going to be my starting shortstop for the year, which was extremely crazy, right? Because you think I went up against two guys that were all city. They were all everything. And they ended up transferring out and leaving that junior college. Interesting enough, those two guys were drafted the next year.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
So we had, especially for a
guy who didn't play high school baseball. Wow.
Yeah, and then we had three shortstops there that actually got drafted, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
No, I love hearing that. So tell us a little bit, well, how did the draft process with the Dodgers go?
Well, that was also an interesting part because my first game in season, the Dodger scout came up to me and he said, I'll be in touch. The contact hit me. I didn't even know there was minor league baseball, which is crazy. I know what people probably think, like, where was this guy growing up in a cave? But when you grow up in a low economic household, immigrants, you know, I mean, you're literally just looking for that next meal, that next trying to pay the bills. All I knew about baseball was my grandpa was a Dodger fan, but I had no idea that there was minor league baseball. I had no idea how to get to the path. How do you get, like, how do you go from rookie ball to single A, double A? I didn't even understand the structure. So when I was at Mount SAC, I didn't even know what it looked like to get drafted. I was like, I guess, I don't know. I don't even know where you go if you get drafted. Like, what happens? So when he told me that, I was kind of just like, all right, we'll see what happens. You know, we'll play it by ear. At this point, I'm just focusing on playing better and then making sure that I'm actually playing next year on this team. So it's one of those where I go through the year, I have a good year, and then at the end of the year, the draft comes along, and then now at that point, there's a little bit of buzz. You know, the coach is telling me, like, hey, four or five scouts called me. You know, you might get a call. You might get drafted, this and that. And you're just thinking, yeah, I'll probably go 50th round. Who knows, right? I mean, back then they had so many rounds. So I was like, yeah, I'll just probably be like a real late. And then the second day of the draft, the scout called me in the morning and said, you've been drafted by the Dodgers in the 20th round, which for me was like, oh, my goodness. I went from high school dropout to getting drafted in the 20th round by the Dodgers, who was my grandparents, my parents. Everybody's a Dodger fan. So it's one of those where you think, man, it's one of those moments in life that you think, like, is this really happening type deal, you know? It's a little bit of surreal. But even then, that turned into a whole interesting process in the back end, too.
No, I love that. And so can you get into the specifics of that a little bit?
Yeah, on the back end, what happened was they made an offer. And then I felt like I went to my dad and I said, hey, Dad, they're offering me this much to go play baseball, basically. And he goes, man, that's three times of what I'm making. So he goes, take it. So I was like, all right, I guess let me call my coach. So then when I called my coach, he says, no, this is your first year out. He goes, if you stay another year, you're going to triple that next year. And I said, you sure? He's like, yeah. And at this point, I've always had a dream of buying my mom a house. Like, I was forever. I was like, I'm telling my mom, like, I'm going to get you a house one day. And like, even when I dropped out of school, I was like, I'm going to get you a house one day. Like, we're going to get out of here. Don't worry. You know, like, well, I'm done with this. All these drug dealies. This neighborhood is just not good for our family. And she's thinking, like, yeah, what is this kid going to do? So my goal was always to maximize the bonus. And I went back to Mount SAC for like a draft and follow. And that coach was right. I went back. I was kind of getting a lot more attention from the scouts. I mean, everywhere I went, we got like four or five scouts looking at me. And then my coach was right. They tripled the offer the next year, and then that's when I signed. And then that's when I got my mom her house. And it was probably the biggest thing I've done in life is get her out of that place and get my family out of that neighborhood. And interesting enough, it's still my parents still live there. And I always think to myself, I was like, that's crazy. In 1997, how everything changed for us. Yeah, you want to talk about culture clash? I think once you get drafted and they give you your money, you think, all right, I'm all good. This is happening, da da da. And then you show up to the real, like the real news, right? Where you go, like real life, where you're going into. I was sent to Port St. Lucie in Florida to the. It was the Mets complex, but the Dodgers were doing like their extended spring training there. And this is extended spring training. Is usually like the guys that didn't make a team, they go there, or they get a lot of teams from like Latin America, like Dominicans, Venezuelans, who are like 17, who are getting ready for rookie ball, who are just kind of still sharpening their skills. And for me, it was one of those where it was a little bit of a culture clash, because I came from not being very experienced as far as coaching or anything like that. And it was just an academy, right? You get there and you go like, okay, hold on. Everything is so organized now. Like I'm in the business of baseball. Like this is, yeah. This is no longer Mount SAC. This is no longer junior college. This is no longer Sunday league. You go like, this is a real deal. And then, just the level of play, I think that people don't understand is the level of play and what these players can do out there. It's just amazing on how sometimes you would see a person and you would go like, how old are you? And they're like 17. And you go like, wow, 17. And then you just go like, what an arm, what a hitter. You know, every you're just amazed all the time of like, how did I even get here, right? You just start thinking like, do I even belong here? You know, and there's a lot of doubts on that end. But at the same time, there's also that confidence of like, hey, guess what? I've been training for this my whole life. I've been playing baseball since I was 5 years old. You know, and I've never stopped. I used to hit rocks on the railroad tracks all the time, every day. So it's one of those that I felt prepared for the moment. But when you get drafted, that's probably the biggest thing where you think like, okay, hold on. Now you've got to compete, and you really got to put yourself out there. As far as it's uncomfortable, you know, it's not, you're gone from the comforts of your home. You're gone from the comforts of your junior college. And it's one of those where now you're open up to the world, right? You're facing the best in the world. And I think that was probably the biggest jump as far as minor leagues.
So you went from a high school dropout and now you have a doctorate degree. How did that come about?
Man, that was another big moment for me, because I felt like when baseball teaches you so many life skills, it's ridiculous. You know, especially once you get into like higher level and you're competing with even in college ball. Once you're also in professional, you just learn more discipline. You learn what it takes to prepare yourself, to prepare your mind, to prepare your body. And you also learn the consistency of like, I got to come back tomorrow. Like the consistency of focusing on every single pitch. Every single pitch, it's its own environment, its own thing, right? So you learn ultra focus on like the moment. So for me, it's I felt like that's probably the biggest thing I was missing when I was young, when I was going to the school. It's in the classroom, I was not able to bridge that gap between what I did when I was playing and being able to focus, and then actually taking it into the classroom. And it felt like after I got done with my career, it was just natural. Like I went to the classroom and I was actually learning. As the instructor was teaching us, I would learn the material, and then I would go home and I would read. If they told us to read chapter 10, I would read chapter 10. If they told us to do anything they told us to do, I was like, I'm going to prepare like I did when I was in the minor leagues. And then when it came to test taking, then I started to get straight A's and more A's and more A's. And I just started to find that success in the classroom and started to find like, hey, you know what? I could actually do this and start to believe in yourself, right? Sometimes at the beginning, you don't have that belief because it's something new. But as you start to accumulate some success, then you start to go like, hey, you know what? I could actually do this. But even then, I found that first I wanted to get my bachelor's degree. I mean, at that point, I would have been the only person in my family to get a bachelor's degree. So it's one of those where you go like, that 4-year degree is already a huge thing. So yeah, you have all those doubts of, can I do that? And then once you're getting into those things, like my junior year, I felt like, you know what, not only could I get a bachelor's degree now, I could probably start looking at other professions. And first I wanted to be a PE teacher. But then as I started to get more into the pedagogy and those type of classes, I just realized that like, you know what? I think I'm better off in the medical field. I don't know if I want to be a coach. I don't know if I want to go that route. I remember I met someone when I was in the Dodgers. One of my buddies was going to a physical therapy school that I went to high school with. And the Dodgers physical therapist knew him. So there was a little bit of a triangle there where I felt like, you know what? Maybe I could leverage that. Let me look deeper into physical therapy. And I just found that with my experience and with what I wanted to do with my life, and just it seemed like a really good match. But it doesn't mean it just happened naturally, right? Because then you start dealing with all the doubters, you know? I mean, there are so many counselors that sometimes don't give you the best advice, right? They try to guide you where they feel like you should go, as far as like any coaches or anything, right? They sometimes try to limit your potential by basically guiding you based on their experience or basically based on their limitations. And I feel like I ran into a couple of counselors that tried to push me into be an assistant physical therapist. And I was already in my junior year in college, and I was like, no, I think I could do the doctorate. And then everything they would talk about was always the negative stuff. Oh, you need to do organic chemistry. Or you still need to do A, B, C, and D. But then the athlete in me kind of kicked in, and I was like, you know what? If I put my full effort into this, I think I could get a doctorate. And sure enough, it was one of those where everything kind of lined up. And then I ended up getting into Loma Linda University for the doctorate. That's also a cool story, though, because I think when I showed up at Loma Linda for the interview, my scout, when they drafted me, had told me, like, Ishmael, baseball's going to open up so many doors for you going forward. Like, you know, in the next couple of years after you're done, there's going to be so many doors open for you just because you played professional baseball. And at that time, I didn't understand it. But Loma Linda was probably the first time where I realized, like, hey, you know what, that was a big deal. Because when I went for the interview, we talked about the academics, but 90% of the interview was basically, how was Dodgers? How was your minor league experience? And they wanted to know, like, hey, what did you learn there? How was it? Another thing was, the dean of the school had played minor league baseball. So then on the first day of my interview, they took me to go meet him just because we had that in common already, that we're ex-pro players. And then a week later, they called me, and the dean actually called me and said, Ishmael, you're in. So it was one of those where I was like, you know what? Maybe baseball did open up some doors on the back end.
I love hearing that story and how much baseball had an effect on, you know, you getting your doctorate degree. I think that's really neat. But I want to know, so when did you start to get into, like, Flow's training, and then how did, you know, Flow's Doc come about?
Well, yeah, I think the Flow's Doc, which is interesting, was almost an organic growth. I think I've always been a little bit of a disruptor, right? I've always been a little bit, like, out of the box thinker. So when I got into physical therapy, a lot of it was just in the box, like, medical model thinking, which was just very isolated training, very isolated movements. And it was one of those where, yeah, we're able to do certain things, but at the same time, you're also have the constraints of the medical system. Like I was telling my buddy that other day, is that in physical therapy, sometimes when you get a referral, like for a shoulder, the only thing you could work on is the shoulder. And that's when I first started, was literally you're limited to just working on that one joint. And if you started working on other areas, sometimes you wouldn't get reimbursed. Like insurance companies wouldn't pay for, if you came in for shoulder pain and I was working on your hip, they might not pay because they're going like, why are you working on the hip when there's referrals for shoulder? So for me, that model always bothered me my first 5 years when I was a therapist. And then that's when I started to really start thinking, okay, when can I start working more with systems? And then probably 2-3 years ago is when I started to go like, you know what, I'm going to develop my own system. I'm going to develop it and I'm going to deliver it directly to the players, directly to the coaches, directly to the parents. And I'm going to skip this whole medical model, this whole restrictions that we have, because I felt at that point that I had learned enough about systems and I had learned enough about how it functions. And also I had learned enough about how the opposite is also causing detrimental effects, right? Where you're going like, yeah, we treat in isolation, we train in isolation, and sometimes that doesn't transfer to the field. And I go, I think if I go systems approach and I really develop something that is very simple, very easy to apply. And that's when I became, I guess they call it now the Flow's Doc, which is interesting. But that thing, that's when I started to talk more about flow and fluidity.
I love that. And, you know, I've started to really get into some of the things that you're doing as well and starting to notice, you know, we need to be strong enough, but we also need to be able to have, you know, flowy movements. And, you know, I which really, you know, has, you know, attracted me to your, you know, your different channels. And I'd highly encourage everybody out there to go follow you. But tell us a little bit about, you know, just some things that you've learned, some misconceptions, or just wrap on that a little bit and give us your best, I don't want to say sales pitch, but give us your best reasoning on how this is going to make them better baseball players.
Well, the biggest thing I think I want people to understand is that the system, our movements don't work in isolation, right? We work through movement patterns. And it's one of those where I think people have to start to understand that everything that we do is movement pattern dependent. Like, for example, I think the best way I could explain it is like when you turn a double play, right? When you turn a double play, you cannot train the shortstop by himself. Like your shortstop could be legit, right? You could, that's like your hip. And you're going like, we're going to make this thing the greatest thing ever. We're going to have the best shortstop ever. But when it comes to turning the double play, you go like, oh, you need the second baseman. You need the first baseman. You need the pitcher to make a pitch. Like there's a whole ecosystem that happens. And it's one of those that what I did is I actually combined everything into, we're going to work on the plays themselves, but I went through it more through like a movement component to where I go like, we're going to make sure that your whole movement system is integrated. And I think it's one of those where developing that concept was hard enough, but the other part was developing the app and the custom app where it, like a fellow like yourself reaches out and I would go like, hey, guess what? If you go ahead and join Baseball Flows and get onto our app, and then at that point, you're going to go through a movement screen where it's systems based. It's you're actually getting up from the ground and standing. And then from there, we're going to keep on videoing you every month to see your gains and your improvements. But it's one of those that the system itself is already developed on the app and it takes you through progressions. It'll take you through the exercises. So usually players will get like 5 or 6 flows, movement practice that they'll do. And then at that point, they're just going through the system. Every 2 weeks, they get 5 new ones. And it's one of those that we keep track every month as far as just sending us the movement screen. I wanted coaches to just have like a click and train. Like, how easy can I make this for coaches, and how easy can I make this for players, and how easy can I make it for parents? I mean, I tell people when they purchase, like 3 minutes later, you're already doing the movements. And then you have 24/7 access through it. I'm also available through messages. So some people will message me as far as like certain questions they have. So it's one of those that I want to keep that part alive as far as the communication back and forth. Because for me, it's always been about implementation. I could develop the best system. We could have the best explanation, the best sales pitch. But at the end of the day, if we're not stimulating the body and we're not conditioning the body and the movement patterns for the demands of the game, then it's one of those that at a certain point you go like, what are we really training anything at this point other than just a good sales pitch?
No, I love hearing that. And, you know, you keep referencing making players better in games, which I think, you know, we can all, at the end of the day, we can all appreciate that. And, you know, a lot of your audience that is listening right now, a very high percentage, they are team coaches. So tell us a little bit about how we as, you know, team coaches, whether that's summer ball, whether that's school ball, how can we implement a system or your system in a team setting?
Well, that's probably the team setting for me is probably one of the most exciting things I work with because there's so many different ways of doing it, but it's very simple. It's one of those that every team has different needs, right? Not every team is going to be the same as far as the movements. So what we do is we create your own program. So we create a custom program for that team. And then we try to figure out how is their workload on the back end. And then we go, okay, should we have flows right at this point? Like for example, during the season, we go, okay, well, you guys are playing a lot of games. Are we working more like with recovery flows? Are we working more with the movement prep, the warm-up flows? Are we working like lower intensity baseball flows versus the off-season, right? In the off-season where we go like, hey, guess what? At this point, we could go all out. We can start to really train dynamic movements. We could really start to really challenge the players and put them in different environments, different designs where we go like, hey, guess what? We're trying to emerge dynamic movers. So let's make the environment as dynamic as possible where sometimes during the season, that is really hard to implement, right? Because you're going like, yeah, we don't want to tire them out. We want to calibrate at that point.
Are there any success stories that really come to mind? I mean, I'm sure you could think about a lot of them off the top of your head, but I would love to hear, you know, a story or if you've got a couple of different stories about how this has helped kids go from, you know, X, Y, or Z to now they do X, Y, you know, whether that's getting more time on a varsity playing field or, you know, potentially going to college. Are there any success stories that you'd like to share today?
I'll tell you, this is one of those that those are always happening. I mean, there's so many people that send me messages and testimonials that go like, hey, my kid went from running this to doing that. And it happens within a month. It happens within 2 months. And you're just going like, oh, wow, that's a big jump. But for me, I've also been very realistic, right? I'm like a very realistic person in the sense like, you know what? I can't take credit for all this stuff, right? Like, who knows? Maybe the kid just grew an inch. But I think for me, I always feel that, all right, can I take a player that 3 years has been on it? And you go like, how was their story? And for me, one of them is Diego Barrera. He pitched last year at Loyola Marymount. And it's one of those that he's my childhood friend. That's his son. So this has been my pilot with the flows from day one. So from the day I started to develop them, Diego has been doing them. He's the player that I put out there all the time as far as he's on my app. He's the model. And it's one of those that Diego went from, he was at the University of Washington as a freshman, but he wasn't pitching much. He was getting hip impingement. So he was actually, his front hip was hurting quite a bit. So then his father brought him to me, and then we started to work with the flows. Immediately the hip pain went away. Then he transferred to Mount SAC, which is, it went full circle, right? He went to the junior college that I went to, and then he had a great year there. And throughout that year, we're experimenting, piloting the flows. He was doing them all the time. He did great at Mount SAC. Then he went to Loyola, and then he just had two great seasons over there. So as far as that, he's probably at this point, I'm guessing he's going to get drafted probably this week. So it's one of those that he went from a kid who was getting injuries, smaller, you know, he's not a big lefty. And it's one of those that he's probably the last 2 years, he's had two great seasons at a D1 school. And you go like, and at this point, when I talk to him, he goes, I love my flows, man. He's like, I feel like my movements on the mound are so fluid. He's not one of those kids either that he overloads his body in the weight room. So it's one of those where you go like, he's actually just been doing the flows this whole time. And it's one of those where I go like, that's probably going to be one of my biggest success stories, because he's been so loyal to the program that I go. And then another thing is he's doing it for so long, right? Where you go like, he's a 3 year guy that you go like, hey, you know what? I do see the difference in his movements. Cause sometimes you'll get some people that you go, hey, get what, a month in, you go, is that really motor learning? Is that really transferring to the field, or are they just kind of getting better gradually? Right.
How long does this usually take?
Usually about 15, 20 minutes. So, you know, it's five flows. The whole thing about this too, is that, and I want all the coaches to know, is that every player gets access to that. So these players can practice it at home. They could practice in the hotel room. Like, they don't have to be with the team to get better at the movement. So I think that's the biggest thing that probably separates us from a lot of programs, is that we give individualized, like program, not individualized, but the players themselves have individual access to the program on their phone. And then at that point, when they get to practice, they already know the movements. You don't have to coach them. That's what I always tell the coaches is, if you want your players to have a clean movement system that you don't have to worry about, that you can go into skills training, that you go like, hey, guess what? This kid is a clean mover. I was like, baseball flows will take care of all that for you. You will never have to worry about any type of movement issue on that sense of having a kid who can't do these transitions. How well are you transitioning from certain patterns to athletic patterns, right? And it's one of those where fluidity and flow and just having that movement, it's almost like I mentioned before, the double play, right? It's sometimes we can't explain what it is, like a nice double play, but you do know when you see it, right? When you go like, man, that was smooth. Like, they just turned two and it seemed like seamless transitions, right? Like, you threw it to the second baseman threw it to the first baseman. It all happened so quick. And then we also see the clunkiness sometimes, right? Where you go like, whoa, hold on. The shortstop throw to the second baseman wasn't that great. He had to reach for it. Now the transfer was suffered from the second baseman because of that. So now he had to make up for it. Now he's throwing it from his back foot. Now he threw it too high for the first baseman. Now the first baseman steps off the bag and you go like, wow, they didn't turn two. But then you start to realize like, why didn't they turn two, right? You go, that probably wasn't the most efficient way to turn into double play. And that's probably the best way to explain the movement flows, where we go like, we don't just train movement A to B. We train the efficiency, right? We train the perfect transfers from the shortstop to the second baseman to the first baseman. But the way I do it is I just do it with the body, right? I do it from your knee to your hip, to your mid back, to your shoulders, to your arms. I go, I train those transitions just like you would train a double play. So it's one of those where I think coaches will start to see their players moving better. And then they also start to see those connectivities between them as far as like nonverbal communication.
So what really separates baseball flows from, you know, other like-minded products or systems?
Well, usually for me, it's always been starting where we started when we were kids. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things too that separates this system from a lot of other systems, is that we work more with the neural system, right? The neurological system, in the sense that we look at developmental patterns. So we look at, how was your nervous system developed to begin with? And it's one of those that for me, it's you want to start at the lowest level, which is lying on your back. Can you transfer from lying on your back to going to your side to starting to work your way up to standing? And it's one of those that's exactly where our system starts, but it doesn't mean that that's where we finish. You know, I usually try to get players to be as dynamic as possible, as quickly as possible. But it's one of those where that's where we start, is we start on the ground. So we start with a lot of ground-based flows. Once they start to improve those transitions, then we start working our way up to where we're working more with vertical changes. And it's one of those too that I like that you mentioned that I put a lot of plays out there, because I think people don't realize how many changes in vertical heights there is in baseball. I mean, I think everybody falls in love with hitting and pitching, and then you go like, you don't realize what we do on defense, on the bases. I mean, defense for me has always been one of those that it's underappreciated, right? And I mean, but I think as a coach, you know, right? You give up a run, you got to score two to win it. So you go like, hey guys, how about we just stop giving away runs? How about we just play better D? And usually you go like, those teams, I mean, there's nothing worse than facing a team that's on defense, fundamentally sound, and that's got good flow, and that's turning every double play, right? Those are rally killers. And there's nothing better than a team that throws the ball around, right? So it's one of those where you go like, I think we are focusing sometimes too much on certain skills, and we don't focus on the entire movement, the entire flow, the entire integration into the game, right? Because there's a lot more to the game than just hitting and pitching. And it's one of those where you go like, yes, those are probably the ones that get the highlights. But at the same time, if we move better, those are going to improve. Everything's going to improve, you know. But it's one of those that you want to do it through a movement system based. You want to do it through developmental patterning. And it's one of those that's exactly what I started to notice. The guys that are performing great on pitching and hitting, they have the best developmental patterns. Like, they could just flow from the ground up, no problem. And the kids that are struggling with a lot of those skills just don't have those foundational movements. So my biggest thing was like, all right, let's develop an app. Let's develop a easy application for coaches to do. And let's put these players through the progression they did when they were kids, right? Let's put them through the same movements, the same environment, the same design. And let's see what manifests at the end. And at the end, what I started to realize was it manifests real robust movers. It created players that were really dynamic when they move. So many options, so many ways to do things. And it took that robotic movement that we usually see players develop, and it took that and it turned them into more fluid, more adaptable, more adjustable players. And I think, I mean, even for me, right, when I played, I felt like that's one thing that I was definitely missing, was that adjustability and that adaptability to be able to do certain things and get into certain transitions and get in and out and be able to make those like elite plays. And that's why I developed the system, is we want to take people from not standing out to being all-stars, man.
Well, I love it. And, you know, this whole conversation, Ismael, I appreciate you, and I appreciate the different things that you've shared with us. It is evident in speaking with you just for a few minutes that, you know, you're very passionate about what you're doing, and you want to make players better, and you love it. But I know there's going to be a lot of people who want to get in contact with you. What would be the best way to do so?
Usually the website, you know, if you go to www.baseballflows.com, I think we have our social media links there. They could also message me. Another thing is, if listeners really want to learn a lot more about this and they're into reading books, I did write an ebook. So if they subscribe to our newsletter, then they'll get a free copy of the ebook. So then they start to learn more a little bit about, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of those that I could start telling people about the flows and discussion. But I think sometimes when you read something, it just goes into a different part of your brain, right? It's a different type of understanding the world and understanding what someone is saying. So I think that ebook is going to be a big thing. So if people are into reading and they want to throw some, they want to learn a little bit more about the history, they could go ahead and subscribe, and then we'll send them a copy. And then also they could find me on Twitter. I think flow, that's probably where the flows dot came, right? Because they had me pick, what is it called? The handle. And I didn't know what to think of, so I just put Flows Doc. And then I think your handle kind of gets put out there, right? And then I think now everybody calls me the Flows Doc, which I like, by the way, right? Because I think it describes exactly what I'm doing, is we're working on robust movement, we're working on fluidity.
I will link that all down in the show notes so the listeners can see, you know, how to get in contact with you. But again, Doc, I appreciate your time, and I loved getting to speak with you today, getting to ask you a ton of different questions and getting to hear about your story. But is there anything else that you would like to talk about or tell our listeners before you go?
I think for me, it's always just bring it back to just being a good person, doing your job, and kind of always bring it back to that part of it as far as just authenticity and just putting out there something that is legitimate, just uniquely you. And it's one of those where I feel like with this system is my passion and my uniqueness and the way I see movement and the way I interpret it, but also listening to a lot of people, right? Is obviously I didn't develop this by myself. And I feel like Doug Lotta, right? Doug, for me, has been a great influence in the sense that he sees movement entirely, I wouldn't say entirely different, but from a different perspective than I do. And I've learned so much from him. I've learned so much from so many other people that I've run into on Twitter, whether it be a coaches that are on our program. And it's one of those that I always want people to think is that this system is not based just on me. It's based on also the people that I learned from. And I think it's also another thing I always want to talk about is also my family. It's one of those where my wife has been a great influence on me. I got three boys, and it's one of those where it's for me, it brings me a little bit of emotion when I talk about it because my sons are all into the flows and they're always talking about it. And they're always kind of trying to figure out social media wise, like, you know, how many followers I got and what's going on there. And the ebook, they wanted their picture in there. So they were all happy about being in the book itself. And it's one of those that I haven't deviated too much from that kid who went to Mount Sac and was just trying to figure life out. And now it's just a different thing, right? Where I'm trying to really bring value to the baseball and softball world. But at the end of the day, I always like to deal with human beings, and I'm all into relationships greater than everything, man. That's probably what I want to close with.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.